First off, I just want to apologize if I appear nervous. It's actually not because of my presentation. I'm going whitewater rafting for the first time this afternoon. So this might be my last act in public health. So given that, the last thing I want to have happen is that you guys reconvene next year and say, hey, you remember that guy who died after his mediocre presentation? It's not good. My name is Sean Kiernan. I'm the EPI supervisor at the Fairfax County Health Department. I'm talking to you guys today about developing an informatics system that automates the vast majority of our Zika virus test requests and notifications. Feel a little out of place. Obviously, there is no local transmission of Zika virus in Northern Virginia. But I think this just speaks to the amount of work that local and state health departments do who weren't really suspecting that they were going to have local transmission of Zika virus in the U.S. Okay. Talk to you a little bit about Fairfax County's background, our process prior to our electronic system, the actual system that we developed itself, and then looking forward how we could utilize this tool in other areas of public health. Health Department's mission. Okay, Fairfax County, if you don't know, if you're not familiar with it, it's the largest jurisdiction in the National Capital Region. It's a few miles outside of D.C. in Northern Virginia, locally administered, so we're county employees, not state employees, yet we follow all the state laws and regulations. Densely populated, about 1.1 million people. It's the 30th largest county in the U.S. The one thing that always sticks out is a lot of traffic, and it's wealthy. It's usually in the top five list of the wealthiest counties in the country. One in three people speak a language other than English at home, so a large immigrant community, and five major hospitals. Just a reminder as well about Fairfax County, our primary biting mosquito in Fairfax County is Aedes albopictus, so there is a chance, obviously, for local transmission. We do trap a handful of Aedes aegypti every year. So across a lot, I'm guessing, local health departments and state health departments across the country, the primary role for Zika virus is approving public health testing for Zika virus. You can see all of our other actions there as well. So our previous process, starting in 2016, the Commonwealth of Virginia started Zika virus testing at their the state lab. The approvals were done by the local health department based on where the provider resided. We have about 3,000 providers, clinicians in Fairfax County, so a lot of the test requests came through Fairfax County. And it's based on the Virginia Department of Health's algorithm for testing. This is the most current version. Obviously, it's changed as the outbreak has gone along. They've been more restrictive lately. We're primarily just testing pregnant females right now who have had travel. I'm not going to go through this. The purpose of this slide is to show how busy this process used to be. 12-step process. About 2 hours on average it took to get through this process for a positive case, about 1 hour just for a request. So this is old paper-based system talking to providers about Zika virus, approving testing. I'm seeing a lot of nodding heads out there. They're familiar with how much this process. We have to send notifications here, there, everywhere. We have to send forms into the state health department. We need to talk to providers about lab requisition slips and all that kind of stuff. So I think a lot of people agree it's a cumbersome process. And that's what we wanted to fix with our system. Okay, again, a busy slide. This is all the administrative processes, all the forms we have to fill out to all our different partners, whether it be the Virginia Department of Health, internally at the Fairfax County Health Department, or clinicians who are requesting testing. One thing I do want to point out from this slide, we're big advocates for ICS in Fairfax County. We like to practice during kind of non-emergency events like Zika, so we're ready for emergencies. So we do activate ICS during these type of events. That just adds to the notification process. If you ever worked in ICS, you need to make sure IMTs are notified and things like that as well. Okay, so our pie-in-the-sky goals, when we realized how much work this was going to be, was to develop an online system. We didn't know where we were going to go with it yet, but we knew we wanted a system in place. So we wanted it to be in a secure online clinician portal for requesting Zika testing, a cloud-based system, obviously, so we could access from anywhere. We want the system to allow, as an epidemiologist, I want to be able to track data, track all of these requests, be able to pull data out from the system, and then it'd be great, obviously, if it could send internal and fill out internal, external forms, send notifications via secure email, and alleviate that administrative burden on us. So we settled on a SharePoint system. Originally, I only knew SharePoint as a system that was kind of a file repository. You just share files between agencies, a secure platform for that. I think the military started using it more to its capabilities in the past. like a lot of government agencies, we have a lot of IT hurdles to get through. Only certain software systems are approved by our local health department, by our county. SharePoint was one of them, so we're kind of forced into this system. Thankfully, we had a programmer who've worked with SharePoint in the past with the military to kind of really get to that highly configurable and usage varies. And we've really modified it a lot to really meet its needs. I'm going to talk a lot about workflows in the system. Those are the automated actions within the system. That's just triggering either emails or forms being filled out. So the system itself, obviously when you do any sort of collaboration, we needed a lot of collaboration with this. We needed to make sure this met the needs of all of our partners, whether internally or externally. So you could see all of our internal partners there. We worked a lot with our informatics teams, epidemiologists, nurse, our lab supervisors, maternal child health program as well. And then the other big thing we needed to do is we needed to make sure it met the needs of our providers. We have champion providers in our community, so we reviewed the system with them prior to release to ensure that it met their needs as well for ease of use. The system is constantly evolving. We don't even have version numbers. It's just every few weeks we add a new workflow or a new process to the system to make sure it meets our needs. So you can see how quickly we got it up and running. January 2018 is when the state started testing. Our system was operational about 3 months later, March 23rd. And then since that point, we've modified it a lot. Okay, so when we went live with the system, we sent a health advisory to all our providers saying, you need to use this link now to request testing, public health testing for Zika virus. It was also, the link's on our webpage right there. If they call us and try to do it the old-fashioned way, we said, no, you can't. You have to, when you go to any system like this, you kind of have to enforce it. You need to make sure that you're not doing it both ways. So we said, you have to go to this link to request testing. It was tricky at first. Now we don't get any calls anymore. They just know to go to the system to request testing. So definitely successful in that variety. When you click on this link, this is the form that pops up. Obviously outward-facing, anyone can access this. Hopefully only providers access it. That's kind of the trick to these systems. This is encrypted, protected, HIPAA-compliant information. Two of the big, huge benefits to this are required fields. If anyone's ever dealt with requests for testing or anything like this, clinicians don't have a lot of the information sometimes. This requires them to give us the information we need to approve tests. If they don't have that information, they need to get it. They can't submit it otherwise. It's small, I know, I'm sorry, but you guys can access this if you want as well through our webpage. If you click on down here about travel or pregnancy, other fields will pop up and ask further questions as well. The other thing I wanted to point out is an acknowledgement by the provider who's submitting the testing that this does not mean it's approved. They will be further contacted by the health department about their approval, the approval process and further steps. Okay. This is the back end page that we see. The big black box is obviously covering patient information. This is actually the live system right here. I have a test one on the top. Again, really small. You guys who don't have eyesight, who have bad eyesight, cannot see this. I'm sorry. But what it's showing is kind of a lineless view of all of our requests. What happens when a provider submits a request is we get an email saying we have a request in the queue to review. You would go into the request. You would review it by clicking on the testing. And you pretty much would go to this field with all the information filled out so we can easily review that information. Our first workflow that I'm going to talk to you guys about is what happens. What happens next when we review the information? You would go back into this line list view. Right to the right of that testing box is a little drop-down menu. And these are the workflows within SharePoint. You either click approve this request or decline this request. That's the two options for this. There's other workflows there, obviously, as well. And that's how simple the process got for us. What happens then is it's going to trigger a workflow that's going to do things. If testing is approved, a couple different things are going to happen. Let me just get ahead. I just went ahead of my slides. Okay. The clinician is going to receive a secure encrypted email saying testing has been approved for your patient, has patient name in there, date of birth, and things like that. They're going to have two PDFs attached. One is the handout that they're supposed to review with their patient, as well as the specimen collection instructions. So got rid of a lot of the talking back and forth with providers. All the information that they need is in this email. We obviously reviewed this with providers to make sure it met their needs as well. The other thing, it's going to send some internal notifications as well. Once a lab has been approved, it's going to send emails to our CD Epi team as well as our lab team, and it's going to notify the Virginia Department of Health and the state lab that specimens are coming in. What it's pretty much doing is it's sending a table every day via email to the Virginia Department of Health or DCLS with all of the approvals. It's sent at 7 a.m. every morning of the previous day's approvals. So again, it got rid of us dumping data into SharePoint folders on different SharePoint folders and things like that from the state health department's perspective. I wanted to kind of display for you guys what these workflows really look like. Again, you're not supposed to be able to read this stuff. It's too small. But this is how complicated they get. This is why you kind of need someone who's very familiar informatically with SharePoint to develop these systems. These are the algorithms that go into place. If anyone's ever worked with lab requisitions and submitting labs, it's probably the hardest process in public health. You have an outbreak going on. You finally get specimens submitted, and then they're rejected by the public health lab. It's not a good feeling. The development of lab requisition slips is to try to avoid that as much as possible. So this is a public health view only. These PDFs are automatically going to be created for you, the lab requisition slips for the patients. If you click on them, these are what they're they're fillable PDFs where information is just being dumped into the state lab request forms. If public health testing is declined, only one action is done. Email is sent to the provider. It doesn't tell them why it's declined, but it gives them a link to that current algorithm. It gives them a link to the CDC testing recommendations. And if they still want to pursue testing, they would get a link to where they can get testing through private labs. As I said before, there is a public health view section of this. This is going to be on the bottom of the request form. This is information. A lot of this is actually automatically filled in by our workflows. They're going to be, if it's been approved, it's going to be dumped into this. We do enter some manual information into this, and that is the lab results. Our lab is going to enter that information just so we can have a more complete record of the patient as well. I did mention we obviously do have Aedes albopictus mosquitoes, so we do have some sort of concern that there could be local transmission of Zika virus in Fairfax County. So if a case is infectious, we do want to do some vector control actions. Thankfully, we're a very well-funded county. We have our own team of disease-carrying insects program that will do vector abatement actions if we do have a local case that's infectious. Again, this was a process that we had to notify the Virginia Department of Health of all the actions that we took. We needed to make sure that they were aware of actions and we were aware of what they were doing as well. So again, all these actions are captured in the system as well, and notifications are automatically made via workflows to the state health department. Pregnancy registry reminders, again, these were emails or calls that we had to make to providers saying you're due on an assessment for one of our patients that was in the pregnancy registry. Now we just click on a box within the system. It indicates that the patient is in the pregnancy registry, and these are emails that are automatically sent to the providers telling them an assessment is due. I'm sure you guys are all this is just a view of all of our workflows as well. They could be little, they could be small, but it's just kind of governing the system. I just wanted to display this for you guys. Okay, I'm sure you were curious about our numbers. I said about 1,500 requests in the system in a previous slide since May 22. So about a year and a half, a little over a year, we've had about 1,500 requests for Zika virus testing. These are more concrete numbers. These are 2016 numbers. So in 2016, we had 1,077 requests. 9/11 approvals, 166 declinations. We investigated 39 cases of Zika virus disease and infection in Fairfax County. We did 53 site visits for vector abatement actions. Our major takeaway is one staff member handled all this rather than multiple CD staff who should be doing the other investigations that we have doing. I did some quick math this morning. I should have put this in the slide. I don't know why I didn't. So if I estimated our old system, about 1 hour per request, which is pretty conservative. The old system would have taken us to handle the 1,500 requests 187.5 business days to complete. That was a lot of business days, obviously, of work. The new system, at about 5 minutes a request, it took about 15.6 business days. So a huge difference there in the amount of work that our public health, that our health department, so we can utilize our resources towards more appropriate things. Our communicable disease nurses can investigate E. coli cases and other cases rather than deal with administrative processes in regards to Zika virus test requests. Looking forward, I'm sure you guys are all thinking, yes, we can use this in a lot of other areas of our public health. we're continually modifying our Zika system. I would love it if Virginia said, you know what, we're not doing Zika testing anymore. It's all private lab. That would be great news to me. We developed a great system we can utilize in other things, but that would free us up even more. But as long as we're doing testing, public health testing for Zika virus, we're going to have a system in place to be able to handle that. We're currently using SharePoint as well for any sort of all other disease reports as well. Very similar process. We have that live right now. We have a third of the cases of TB in the state of Virginia because of our large immigrant population. So we're using that for TB case management. We're dumping all of our RVCT forms on SharePoint and managing cases that way. Outbreak management as well. Public facing, we have animal biting, self-reporting health checks. We're developing that currently right now. And flu reporting, rapid flu reporting as well. We're going to try to do through SharePoint as well. I know I went through this very quickly, but I wanted to have time for questions. A lot of people worked on this. Here's the acknowledgments that I'm throwing up there right now, and then questions you guys may have.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So it's obviously we only respond to Zika requests business hours. We say that on our webpage. But it is because we have an assigned nurse and they kind of just have it on their screen open. They're going to see that email ping them that they are have a request. It's this, most of the time, I'd say 90% of the time, the patient's still in the lab when we say we're going to send you the approval right now. So they can draw the blood then. The other side that I'm sure people are considering, how do we get the specimens? We actually have the patient bring the specimen to our lab. It's crazy, I know, but it works. This is, we've requested this. We didn't want to deal with couriers and things like that, so we were shocked as well. It has been extremely successful. We've had no, pregnant females obviously are very concerned about their health, so they want to get testing. So, coming in a cooler, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hi, I just wanted to know if you can speak to the organizational kind of constraints in terms of staffing. So, like, why did you consider like SharePoint instead of something like RedCap or another platform? And how did considerations about to whom the developer reports, like, how did that inform your decision?
So let me handle obviously the first question. Just because of our county, we had some IT constraints. We needed to work with something that was built within Microsoft, so that's why we went with SharePoint. What was the second question? I'm sorry.
So I guess to whom did the developer report? Was it to the Epi team, or is it like central IT that you liaised with?
Oh, the Epi team, yeah. Everything was pretty much funneled through the Epi team. We worked with our informatics team to develop the system, but everything comes through the Epi team. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, thanks for that presentation. So it sounds like this is a really great system to communicate back and forth with providers. I'm wondering, do you also use it to, do you ever communicate results back up to the state, or does it help with that as well?
It helps with all the forms that we need to, it's automatically filling in all of the forms and the notifications about if things have been approved and if labs are coming in. That helps a lot with that. We're using a version of NEDS, we're using VEDS for most of our case information and lab reports, so they're coming in a lot that way. Yeah. So dual systems, unfortunately.
I was curious, what were the main reasons for samples being rejected or for you know, not taking tests?
So just labs lists being filled out improperly by providers is really the main thing. So that, okay. And that's a common theme. We see that a common theme across a lot of.
But it wasn't like evidence that they hadn't traveled or.
No. Okay. For the rejections of the requests. Oh yeah, yeah. Non-travel. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Last question.
Hi. Thanks. It's quick. What feedback did providers give you specifically? Like you put out your first version and they wanted changes to it.
So they wanted to, obviously they want to put as limited amount of information in there as possible. That's pretty much the main thing. We limited to exactly the information we need just for the test request. The state actually requested more information and we haven't put it on there. And I actually forget those fields right now, but we didn't put it on there. We only put what was needed for a testing request decision. The tricky thing at one point was emails. They didn't want to put their email in there, but that's how we told them that they were going to get their approval or declination decision back.
And are you seeing most testing still coming through Public Health Lab, or is it primarily now moving?
I don't know. We don't get negative results, so I don't know. We only get a very small number of positive results through, like, LabCorp and Quest. The vast majority of our positive results are coming through Public Health. Yeah, 95% of our tests are just asymptomatic females who have traveled to Zika-affected areas.